For June the 3rd, 2016, we talk about neural net game images, Steins Gate, and we ask you about empowering moments in games. Welcome to Level 152. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games and not for people who can say the thing they've been saying for 3 years without stumbling.
Stop listening now.
There was a discussion on the Slack feed about developing random stutters at important moments. It was entertaining to know that I'm not the only one out there like that. So.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean,
you're good company.
I can relate. I mean, it's been 3 years since, you know, I faked my death and assumed a new identity. I still have trouble, you know, with, reliably saying my name.
I got the name out just fine. It was the other stuff, man. You know, like I try and take pride. I say it in the same cadence, same pitch and all that, but sometimes, I guess I could have retaken it if it really bothered me. You know, I think that I just didn't have any banter for this. So I wanted to create something.
Stutter banter. Well,
I mean, it's important to change up the cadence, otherwise the computers will, you know, be able to imitate your voice in, order to frame you for evil.
So you remember what happened to Roger Ebert, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he lost the ability to speak, but he had so much recorded voice just over, you know, a lifetime of broadcast that they were, you know, they were able to kind of take that and stitch together his own vocal synth that sounded pretty right. You know, like it was obviously a computer voice, but it was his computer voice, right?
Sure.
I kind of wonder how close, let's confine it to this right now. How close are we to having that happen for us? Where
honestly,
they could just
that,
go
that
in.
That takes us straight to the brief and David story, because I think that the technology, if they can do what's in his story, they can totally do that with all our voices.
Huh.
Oh my, does it?
Well, that's a little bit of a sneak preview.
So in the near future, we won't have to talk when we do this podcast. We can just type it out.
Exactly. Well, I think that we just like seed it. Like we just feed a couple of links in, give it a couple of prompts.
Okay.
And then hope Twitter doesn't corrupt it.
And we have to try and program banter in somehow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The banter algorithm still needs work.
Banter.exe. Fatal 404 runtime. 404 is not a thing that happens. Not with a .exe. Oh, man.
Right now, it just keeps giving me banting roosters.
Cole NCIS Ross, they call me. How was everybody's Memorial Day weekend?
Lethargic.
Yeah. I didn't do shit. I'm paying for it now.
Oh, I did shit. I did shit all weekend.
Yeah, you're potty training your kid.
Yeah, and we're doing the super intense, like, hey, let's just get rid of diapers and, you know, we'll get a lot of mess everywhere for a couple days and then it'll be better.
Yeah.
And when I say super intense, it's super intense.
Are you sure?
So did you ever have the exchange where Luke's like, why are we doing this? And you're like, because you don't know shit.
And then did you ever get the sense or the suspicion that maybe this is a scheme that was dreamed up by Big Tarp?
Big Tarp. Or maybe just hardwood floors.
Oh, man. Tile for miles. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
we really do not understand the point of
potty
carpet
training. Oh, sorry. I really jumped to conclusions on that. I like carpet. Carpet feels good.
See, I just like, given the option, I feel like I would always rather have like hardwood and a rug.
I don't know. So I vacuum a lot, but when I had hardwood, I would sweep a lot more because like when you're walking around, like there's some, you know, stuff like it's in the carpet. You don't feel it. I feel everything. On a hardwood floor, everything.
Yeah, I guess I actually probably prefer sweeping to vacuuming. I don't like loud noises.
Oh,
like,
gosh. Or,
you know, just like the racket.
It's so relaxing. It's so relaxing. It scares all the cats away. You put those lines in the carpet. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the sand gardens that they carve the shapes in.
Yeah,
that's me with a rug that needs.
Cole, do you own a cat?
No, I don't own a cat.
So just random cats that like have descended on your apartment. Like you wake up in the morning and they're staring in the windows at you.
Yeah, I'm like Charlie from It's Always Sunny. You just got cats following you around. You know, just how life is now. So yeah, that feels like some banter executed. Yeah. So we've got the usual stuff for you, the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. And let us go to
The Brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. David, since we did a sneak peek on yours, what you got?
Sure. So researchers have announced that they've created a computer program which can take graphics from one game and render them in the style of another. The press release earlier today demonstrated Limbo with the style of Firewatch and what Final Fantasy VII would have looked like if it had traveled to the future and stolen Final Fantasy X's aesthetic. Efforts to develop computer artists have, of course, been funded by DARPA in the hope that by creating dirty hippie bots, they can ensure that there will be conscientious objectors when robots eventually declare war on humanity. The announcement made waves almost immediately, and the team has said that they have already been approached by a director wanting to tell their story on the big screen. According to our sources in Hollywood, the working tagline for the picture is, "Just when a group of maverick scientists didn't think their life could get any stranger, they invent a computer that can make art. Singularity ensues." The announcement goes on to argue that by duplicating a modern game with 16-bit graphics, they have passed the indie Turing test, which states that a computer is considered to be sapient if it is at least as creative as most indie developers. So, more actual, not me just making stuff up. So there was a article on Polygon that basically, you know, you've seen these, it goes around like BuzzFeed every so often, the like Google Dream, computer dreams thing.
Yeah, like everybody was putting, like it was, you run it through like, hey, look for dogs in this picture. And then it comes back and everything's made out of eyes and stuff.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Because, you know, robots nightmares. Do not dream of electric sheep. They dream of, you know, forbidden binary messages transmitted by auto mainframes beyond time and cyberspace.
Yeah, Eldritch dog eyes. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Well, there's also a couple of related projects that attempt to be able to transfer art. So where you can take a image, an image you want to kind of use as a base, and then a second image, and it will attempt to transfer the artistic style from the second image to the first one.
Yeah.
So basically what, like, everyone immediately does is, makes their profile picture be Starry Night.
Oh, yeah. Or apply, like use Goatsy as a style on something.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So basically, there's several open source versions of this that apparently you can just download. So guy went
Like Ostagram is one of them. Dreamscope is another.
Yep. So a guy went and tried this on several stills from various video games. So the first several are just like kind of this, the generic, cover of Bioshock Infinite with Starry Night and similarly like with Firewatch and stuff like that.
Yeah, like Van Gogh's stuff works really well because he has those like those very distinct brush marks that can just be applied to anything. Like you just take the color and then it chunks out the color.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. The other ones that seem to work really well are... things are very, I don't know, like very, very stark, like kind of motifs. So like one of them he does is, took the Great Wave and applied it to the art for Just Cause 3, which basically ends up being like everything is made out of waves.
Mm-hmm. I have to be honest, that might be my favorite one.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that's actually something I want to talk about. So then the other thing he does is that's, maybe a little bit more, I don't know, conceptually interesting is, you know, tries taking different games and taking a game and applying a different art style to it. So Bloodborne with Wind Waker, and then like I said, Final Fantasy VII with Final Fantasy. I'm just gonna say X because that's just dumb. We aren't Romans.
It's Final Fantasy X. It's the 10th in the series.
It is Final Fantasy X. This is not Rome.
This is not Mega Man. No, what he did was he took Final Fantasy VII, the CGI, and then mixed it with Yoshitaki Amano's kind of like concept art, that usual brush.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. Okay. That makes a little bit more sense.
Yeah. Amano's artwork was used pretty heavily in marketing Final Fantasy X. Where you got that the association. Sense. Yeah.
So kind of the way what you guys kind of hit on that I think's interesting is I feel like even though this is sort of presented as like OMFG computers doing art, I feel like what the article actually kind of proves is that computers can't do art because
I don't want to get into like a whole what is art thing here. I just want to
I mean more in terms of it seems like I think what's interesting is looking at like I'd say a lot of the pictures actually don't work that well simply because you know what the original image was trying to show and what the art they're using was trying to show don't match up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like this, like the journey mixed with Van Gogh doesn't work that well.
Right. Or I think the one of the big ones for me was actually the very first one, the Starry Night with Bioshock, where, you know, the original image, the whole point of it was to be, you know, what makes it visually interesting is all the detail. Mm-hmm. So when you make impressionistic, it's just like two people falling in front of like a paint explosion.
I think there's stuff in that works, but like you can see where it's like running against the edge. Like it's not consistent. They're kind of fudging and, you know, artifacting from kind of like one sample texture into another. Right. I'll put a link to this in the notes so people can take a look. I think having looked at just a shitload of these because mm-hmm. like it's pretty fascinating. There is kind of like a discretion to it, like deciding what you can pull a good source from. Like these Dark Souls and Bloodborne ones are fantastic. I think.
Mm-hmm. See, I think they're fantastic, but I'd say in terms of like the argument being that the computer is copying Wind Waker's style, I'd say probably not.
I mean, it's pretty much like, it's like synthesis. It's taking elements of both.
Yeah, but I know. I guess my take on it, maybe this is different, is to me, they look nothing alike. And I think part of it is, at least to me, what made Wind Waker you know, distinctive was more not so much its artistic style, so much as its like design, if that makes sense.
I mean, so they made a very specific art style choice for
right.
The...
But what I mean is that style choice wasn't. I mean, this was of course part of it, but wasn't so much in terms of like, you know, like with the Van Gogh stuff, the style choice, or at least one of it, is very obviously the brushiness. Mm-hmm. Whereas I feel the style choice in like the Zelda was a lot more like, you know, the proportions on the characters and, you know, the way things were constructed, as opposed to the actual artistic technique.
I think the examples of these that are the most impressive to me are the ones that where it's not like, hey, I can recognize what the style sample is, because like I went, oh really, on the Just Cause Gray Wave one, because like, that really doesn't work for me. Like just any of the ones where it's like readily identifiable what it pulled from, kind of like meh. But like when you just get a cool third thing that you can kind of when you can still see what's like what the primary source is, like, hey, Dark Souls, that looks like a scene from Dark Souls, but like rendered in kind of a different way. I think that it's less like, oh wow, that is Dark Souls and Wind Waker. It's more like, oh, that's a really cool Dark Souls.
Huh. I think That's an interesting point, because I always approach it more in terms of like being interested to the degree to which the technology can can think or what you know what I mean, whatever.
Yeah.
Actually I think you make a good point that yes, in some ways some of the more interesting ones are actually the ones that produce a more distinct effect. Although actually, did you say you didn't like the Limbo one? I actually kind of like that, just to the degree that like
the
Limbo not look horrifying.
The Limbo one, I guess. Well, no, that's actually like Totoro mixed with Fire. I don't understand what's going on here. Like, that
yeah, I don't know about that. I was meaning more in terms of like the actual like the color palette and the lighting and stuff.
That's one to me that looks far more artifacty. I think like I look at this, it's a kind of a scene of the kid from Limbo hanging from a tree above Totoro with his mouth wide open, I assume preparing for some kind of horrifying vor scene. And it's
I thought this Totoro was some sort of like dragon like creature, and so that was like a wing and
that is Totes Totoro.
Okay. Is Totoro, is that the one with the cat bus?
Maybe. I don't know.
No. We've got one of those, a cat car drive around Cincinnati.
I've not seen it.
Yeah, someone's painted their car.
Yeah. So it should be like noted that this is like a it's something that one particular guy is doing, and they're pulling this kind of like from his work, because he decided to kind of work with video game kind of stuff. This is not like active filtering. These actually take a very long time, and it's fairly expensive to like spin up a kind of like EC2 instance that would do these. That would do these. And even then, it is very kind of limited. Like you get like 800 pixel wide kind of things.
Yeah. But, like, although there are actually ones online that you can play around with that are pretty neat.
Yeah.
Although. I did a couple of the level cover or like logo.
Yeah.
Ooh.
But unfortunately, apparently all of the art I like is of the kind of the more like ultra realistic that doesn't transfer that well.
I'd be curious enough to actually do it myself. I think that the level artwork would work well with like a Mondrian. You know, like the squares, the really geometric stuff.
Okay, yeah. I tried it with the one I was hoping for, just because like conceptually it would be badass. I did the photo that was the cover of Aiko's based off of, or not the photo, but the painting or whatever.
Okay.
Yeah. And but unfortunately, like if you think about it's on the whole that's actually like. It's kind of a painting where the what's impactful about it is kind of the profundity of kind of its minimalism or whatever. Mm-hmm. So basically it's just like a lot of empty space.
Yeah. Yeah. This is like, this stuff is super cool. Anything you like, if you use pizza, as we can see with the Dark Souls 3 one down here, if you use like sausage or ground meat, as the style, you get some really horrifying shit.
Yeah.
But
bodybuilders and pretzel bread is always amazing.
Yeah.
So all this to say, if you fed all the levels dialogue to a computer and said, it's like this, now do something like this, I'm sure they could come out with something pretty close to our voices.
It would just be a bunch of yups. Oh,
yeah.
Weird. I don't know. Dennis, what's the story you got?
Yeah. So I guess it shouldn't be a surprise that this came around again. But Sony has announced their PlayStation Experience for E3, which is going out to 85 theaters around the nation and Canada. And you can basically live stream their E3 press conference. From a movie theater with a group of people. And I bring it up. We did it together last year, and I think you guys tell me if you agree. It is infinitely better watching one of those conferences with a crowd. Like, that made it so much more fun.
It definitely adds to it. I was thinking about that again, and I was actually wondering, like, would it just be better to if we all watched it in the same place, like just like came over to a place and had some beverages and like a pizza and just sat down and watched it.
Mystery Science Theatered it.
I don't know, just kind of like, oh, like just being able to talk about it, I suppose, like in real time, as opposed as opposed to going there. But like it did, like, so we went last year, mm-hmm. and I remember like when they revealed the Final Fantasy VII remake, that room went fucking crazy.
Yeah.
You know, and just,
you wouldn't get that alone.
No, you wouldn't. You know, tune into that episode a while ago. Like, conversely, whatever Advanced Warfare or the Modern Warfare 3 or what have you, I forget, Black Ops 3, there was nothing. It was just crickets. In fact, some people were like jeering at it last year.
Yeah, they were, because it had been talked about in like every single press conference leading up to it. So of course we're going to hear more about it.
Yeah.
Because it was the thing, capital T.
Yeah. So Dennis, you tried to get some tickets for this, and like they're sold out, right?
Sold. I literally logged on 2 minutes after the tickets opened and it was sold out. But I would, if you're near one of these, I would not despair, because they hold 20% of the theater's capacity for walk-ups. Mm-hmm. And if I'm remembering correctly from last year, we had no trouble all getting in.
Right.
And it was not.
Oh, wow. We didn't have tickets last year. Or were we like waitlisted? I forget.
I forget the details, but I know walking into the theater and sitting down and us being like settled in, being like, oh, there's room. Like we could have just showed up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I think maybe two of us had tickets and one didn't, or something like that.
Yeah.
But it was not full to the point of not being able to get a seat.
Yeah.
So I would highly encourage people to check it out. It's just a really fun experience to be around this video game community in a cool way.
Yeah. It's fun to be in a room full of excited people.
Yeah. So that'll be June 13th, which, you know, that's E3. So that's coming as well, I guess, is the other part of the story.
Yeah.
So I'm a little surprised that, like, Microsoft doesn't do something like this, considering, you know, it seems like it's been a pretty big win for Sony.
Yeah, I don't know if this does anything for them financially. It is for certain a cool experience that would be worthwhile if someone was interested in Microsoft stuff.
Yeah, I think so. My wild guess would be, like, because of Sony's status as like just a big media company, they would have connections with theater chains and stuff to like just pull it off more easily.
Okay. I know it seems like that's getting. Type of stuff's getting more common, because like I know our local theater just does like, you know, just kind of like single run shows of various things all the time.
Yeah, I mean, so they've got digital projectors, they can do all kinds of events and stuff. I'd be curious if like if Twitch ever like got their nut up to, you know, make these kind of deals with theaters and just say like, hey, you know, we're going to do one of these events, and then just Twitch takes over streaming that stuff, and then you get like commentary in the theaters, like off of the back.
You get a wall of chat for your theater up on the side.
Oh Jesus,
that's scary.
Yeah, that would be atrocious.
Well. To be fair, aren't we just going to all watch everything in our, you know, Oculus vibes?
Yeah, yeah, in our Oculus fuck chambers, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I'm curious. I don't know.
So, it was a great experience last year. It's coming again this year. I highly recommend people check it out.
Cool. Ben, what you got?
So I looked around for some stories, didn't find anything too happy or interesting, so I'm just going with, there's a Humble Bundle out right now that has Her Story in it, it has Broken Age, and it has 80 Days, so I'm probably going to pick it up for Her Story.
Oh, yeah.
I get that. But
pretty much everything that's in there is really good. There's also Read Only Memories, which I've heard wonderful things about. Sibel is in there, and I've heard, like, mm-hmm. If not great things, I've heard interesting things about it. And then if you do $10, you get Shadowrun Hong Kong, which, you know, I've heard people wouldn't kick out of bed. Yeah, no, this is great. If only for like 80 Days and Sorcery alone. And then Her Story is amazing as well. Have you played Her Story yet, Ben?
I have not.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, go for it.
Sometimes they're humble bundles with lots to be humble about, to use the quote. But no, this one is pretty quality.
Yeah, I've been really happy with Humble Monthly. While we're on the Humble side of it,
is that like the Humble's kind of like PlayStation Plus type thing?
Yeah. So that is it's like $12 a month, and you get like 6 games off the back of that. Oh. Yeah, and like I got like Mad Max last month.
That would be worth it.
Yeah, I got like South Park. Like each of the packs, like not all of them are winners. Like they very obviously have like a headliner and then an opening act and then some other stuff. But like I haven't been like unhappy with any of it.
You know the game I was thinking about that it probably has at some point, but I really wish I could get on like a PlayStation Plus or something is Rage.
Mm.
Just because like I feel like that's the perfect game of like I'd sort of like to play it. I think I'd have a good time, but like I could never justify like spending money on it because it apparently wasn't that great.
Hmm. I assume you're not talking about the sequel to Carrie, right? The Rage, Carrie.
No, the Rage. This is the one that swapped everyone's gender, or not swapped everyone's gender, but assigned everyone a random gender.
That's Rust.
Yeah. I think you're thinking
Rage,
Rust,
you know.
Yeah.
No, Rage was it was the post-apocalyptic, I think. Did it do it?
Yes, nope. it was an id Software game. It was kind of the last major release that John Carmack worked on.
Right. I feel bad because it was basically the id Carmack thing of like it was really, really hyped up. And like was all the news medias and then apparently just wasn't very good.
Yeah. I just heard it was really mediocre. They kind of like a lot of its stuff. They led with kind of the graphics tech. Like its big innovation was mega textures. So instead of having a bunch of individual files that were painted on the geometry, forgive me if I'm saying this wrong. This is my best understanding. What they did instead was it's like a massive image file that's kind of like overlaid on everything in real time. Like that was kind of like, hey, here's this neat thing we can do, and also here's a game you can play in that world. Like David, you can get like a used copy on PlayStation 3 of that for like less than $1.
I probably need to just go do that. Yeah. I'm just more saying like I don't know, like I want more fun. I want more stupid fun games on PlayStation 3. I want whatever the game equivalent of like binge watching bad movies on Netflix is.
I mean, they're only going to get cheaper until they get much, much more expensive. As is the way things go. Yeah. So check out that. It's called the Humble Narrative Bundle, I guess. And it sounds like we're doing a bunch of commercials. We've got Sony. We've got Humble. I have kind of a weird one. This has to do with game localization. In 2014, there was a petition in China originated in China to get Pokemon translated into a form where it'd be, you know, readily playable, by people in that territory, you know, under those, you know, who speak those languages. It apparently had never been done before, which sounds crazy to me, right?
See, I thought they killed people for petitions in China. That kind of takes some guts.
This, I think this originated in Hong Kong, maybe. I will not pretend to have any understanding of the way it works over there. So I will say this instead seems, well, I mean, let's go for even the crazier side of it. Because Nintendo said, hey, Pokemon Sun and Moon, we are going to, you know, bring that. This is going to be the first, official Nintendo release that is, you know, localized for, kind of like mainland China and Hong Kong. And so they brought it there, and they made some announcements. The problem is, and forgive me if I get this wrong, because China has like the different dialects, Mandarin and Cantonese among them, you know, for all these years, for like 20 or so years, they've gotten, they've gotten the Cantonese versions of the Pokemon names and other media, right?
Sure.
And this release is changing the names of the original 151 into Mandarin.
Okay.
And wait, there's like some transliteration happening there. They're going to be pronounced vaguely similar, at least to our ears. But what has people up in arms is the change of Pikachu, which let me see here. So in Candies. Oh, I've got this backwards. So in the original translation in Mandarin, it was Bikachu. Instead, it's going to sound in this new way, like Pekajou, or something like that. Again, like roughly similar syllables, but changed over. I think that.
So it's being written like pinyin, Western script, as opposed to in characters.
No, it'll be written in characters, but kind of like evoking some of the same sounds. You know, Pikachu is a character. What?
Because at least my understanding, I've only studied Mandarin, mm-hmm. but my understanding was that all of the dialects were written exactly the same, that was kind of the whole point of. I mean, apparently not, but that's my understanding. Was that's why like all Chinese movies have subtitles, is because like all of the dialects are supposed to use the same written language. Although maybe it's different for like names. Maybe I
have no idea. I wouldn't.
Yeah, know, I have no.
I would not know to know. Say it. But it's a big enough difference. This switch in dialect and the switch in pronunciation to cause protests in the street of Hong Kong.
Huh.
Yeah. They are just, they're upset about this, and you know, good on them, for this. The ridiculous part though, and like the reason why I saw fit to bring this here, aside from the fact that that's super interesting, that just that localization could kind of change it. The reason I brought this here is for Nintendo's actual response, which is to say like, hey, Hong Kong fans, just ignore the Mandarin spelling and, you know, read it like you usually would.
Duh.
Like, wait a minute.
That's what I do with all my games.
Although, actually, again, going back, and I don't know, could maybe that be kind of getting back to what I was saying? Maybe the point of that is they've changed the pronunciation, but not the spelling.
It doesn't say in the article, like the article.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Yeah, the article,
that was just incredibly tone deaf.
Yeah, I have no idea, but yeah, that's just the gall to say like, don't worry, just close your eyes. It's gonna be fine. Just pretend. It's like, I don't think you get why we're upset. I don't care if the thing that we're like upset about is super goofy on the face of it. Like, that's not really the response we want.
They should just change the name to be something completely different so that nobody's happy.
Hey, this is my little electric rat, Bill. Fuck, Bill's an actual thing. He's like the scientist dude. Fuck.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, the listener interaction portion of the show, where we ask you a question and you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
Yeah, we're asking about empowerment fantasies today, which is most games in some form or another. But what are the moments where you have felt the most empowered in a video game?
Yeah, and I'm going to pick up with Amanda here, who says, when I was able to beat the ending of Mass Effect 2 and I didn't lose anyone. That felt awesome because I'd spent so much time building up my relationships with those characters. I love strong team endings like that. Yeah, that was really satisfying because like it directly rewarded you for playing the game in the way that kind of maximized what the developers put effort into. Like it was very well handled. I was about to say playing the game in the way that it would be the most fun, which that is incredibly prescriptive. But like, you know, like Mass Effect 2 is all about getting to know those characters. And so being able to save them, and not to like make fun of anime or whatever, but through the power of friendship, that's pretty cool.
And I like, it's pretty difficult to get through without losing anyone, right?
Yeah, but just because like eventually some of the on some of the characters that are kind of opposed to each other, you know, like mm-hmm. so they're in direct conflict, you have to have either a really strong Paragon or a very strong Renegade score to you know, resolve those,
not hurt anyone's feelings,
right?
Just
right,
like, yeah. Buffalo people.
What's that?
just kind of like Buffalo people, you know, just tell them how it's going to be, or
or, you know, just find the most compassionate way to you know, to make sure everybody's happy.
So let them down easy.
Yeah, but it's like if you don't do somebody's like loyalty quest, they're not going to be as bolstered in the final, going into the final mission, and they have just a chance of dying randomly as it goes along. Also, you have to be very careful about who you decide to like deploy for what. So it's like, oh, we have this many biotics, and they need, you know, like we need to have the strongest one able to put up a shield. So it's like a choose your own adventure kind of thing.
So would a weapon against them be antibiotics?
Yes.
Okay. Fair enough.
Oh, I appreciated that.
It was pretty good. I think about that too. That's kind of a dumb name for that thing.
Yeah.
David, what does Eric say?
Eric says, the Berserker invulnerability power-up in Doom, or even the BFG. Doom does an excellent job ramping up difficulty and placing these bursts of empowerment in levels where they get to shine. I'm working my way through the new Doom, and it seems like they've taken this approach to heart.
God, the new Doom looks really good.
Yeah, I really want to play it, although I despise the name.
What's the name?
It's Doom. It's just Doom.
I really hate the just like we're gonna stop numbering things and just name it something that's already been named.
That shouldn't stop you from playing a good game.
Fuck search engine optimization.
No. What they should do is after the second one, they should have just started putting the number of O's in the name that it was. So like this would be like Doom, and the next one would be Doom, and so on.
Insert audio of Bender saying Doom. Yeah. No, Siri, I'm not talking to you.
I've actually always wondered. I've only ever like messed around with some of these because I know I really was into gaming back when like I guess Doom probably 1 and 2 came out, or even 3 really. I know like, you know, finding special areas, you can get a lot of the late game weapons. Does that then screw this up, I wonder?
Not really. Like, they just, even if you find the late game weapons, they have such limited ammo.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, and like even like the like what they're talking about with the Berserker kind of stuff. It's that is a temporary thing.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. I don't know. That's funny because like Doom at its heart sounds like the kind of game that you bemoan not existing. I guess.
Yeah, I honestly like I'm really excited for new Doom. So that we can go back to Doom Classic, right? I'm really excited for new Doom. I really want to play it. It's just the other ones, like Doom 3 came out like right before I really got into gaming. Mm-hmm. And so I've just
you guys had a poster of that in your room in college, right?
That was me.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah.
It wasn't even a poster. It was the top of the standee. It was like one of the demons.
I feel like we've told this story before, but do you remember when the stone dude came into our place to talk about it?
Yeah, because we had it facing out into the courtyard, and it was like, "Whoa, you have a demon."
Well, and apparently it then stepped out of the window and chased him around campus.
Cool. Yeah. Ben, what does Chris say? I skipped him there before.
Chris says, for me, the most empowering moment has nothing to do with action and blasting people to bits, but actually being able to avoid those situations. Fallout and Fallout 2 taught me how important dialogue could be, and how you could manipulate situations to your favor instead of everything leading to guns being drawn. The first time I figured out how you could defeat the Master in Fallout by dialogue based on some information I found, that was the most exciting gaming moments for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, that's that actually, I mean, the duck feed standard type thing.
Yeah. Brains over brawn. Pretty good. Dennis, what does Sam say?
Sam says, about halfway through Dragon Ball Xenoverse, I managed to build my character so he could steamroll the rest of the single player campaign by, I'm going to parse this out here because this is pretty complicated here, by standing in one place screaming, turning into Super Saiyan, then shooting beams out of his hands. Repeat until all enemies are dead. This worked all the way up to and included the final boss. It was extremely repetitive, but captured the spirit of Dragon Ball Z in a way that you could ever hope for.
He turned into a Super Saiyan turret.
Yeah. That is fantastic.
Yeah. I feel like that's pretty appropriate.
And how appropriate Dragon Ball with the empowerment stuff. Although I guess any gains in Dragon Ball are offset by the new villain, who immediately is one order of magnitude more powerful than you are.
Yeah.
Yeah. What a weird series.
I have no experience with it.
Yeah.
So there's got to be like a Dragon Ball in 30 minutes that I can get.
Dragon Ball Z Abridged is amazing.
I've watched a significant amount of Yu-Gi-Oh!
See, I would say it, you know, was inspired by that. I would say it's probably much better. I'd say overall much more professionally done. Like production values are much higher. But, and it's also funny because like the series actually is dramatically more coherent when you cut 40% of it out.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah, well, I just said like less less sawdust in the meatloaf. It's you know, just a filler. It doesn't do anything. Mm-hmm. No, like just recently there was like a reissue or just kind of like hey, let's do Dragon Ball again, where, you know, like outside of the abridged kind of like let's make fun of this kind of thing. Like an actual like straight faced, like, oh, we're just gonna do this again, but like in a much more economical kind of way. I can't remember what the name of the series was, but like I know a lot of people on the Slack were kind of like, yeah, this is actually like this is really good.
If you're going
to try and like get this, that would probably be the way to go for it.
Okay, yeah. Cool.
I'd be lying if I said I wasn't tempted, you know, just to go back and revisit it, at least see like, oh, what happens up through like the Namek Frieza arc, because that's kind of where I dropped off in middle school. Mm-hmm. That's funny. Did you not have a Cartoon Network when you were growing up, Dennis?
Oh, no, we didn't have cable.
Okay, that would explain.
Which is funny because I circled around. It turns out I was just ahead of my time because it circled around and we don't have cable now just because it's useless. We stream everything.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I was trying to account for that because like we're the same age and Dragon Ball was pretty big.
I watched Nova as a kid and Scientific American Frontiers.
Ah, you know, so, you probably ended up further ahead. Like that's there's nothing wrong with that.
I did have a debate with my uncle about who's like a you know medical doctor about recent immune system research when I was super young. So Nova is not for nothing. You can get into fights with your uncle.
So, Nova, fight your uncle.
So I as a kid, I did have Cartoon Network. However, in order to do so, I had to cut a clearing in the woods around our house. help cut a clearing in the woods around our house so that we could install a huge satellite dish. not even joking.
No, I know you're not joking. And again, you probably ended up further ahead for it.
I don't know. I feel like that was more just like I'm really glad technology is advanced.
Yeah. I'm going to pick up here. Ollie says, Dishonored. You start at the lowest possible ebb, failing to protect the woman you love from seemingly impossible foes. You go to prison but escape and slowly regain your skills, weapons, etc. until you come back and say, hey, traitors, remember the badass warrior you framed? Well, I'm back, but now I'm a badass warrior who is also a Time Lord, phase-shifting angel of motherfucking death. Yeah. That is
Punk the Crow.
That is a really good answer, and that actually would have been mine. So, nice. Just because I like being contrarian, and I know that I've got to rep it at the very least because Jal is not here right now. So you guys are Philistines.
I do kind of like the kind of returning back to get revenge on. So I love that in Fallout New Vegas.
Hey Chandler, look at me. yeah. Was that Chandler? Like, was that Matthew Perry? Yeah. Or was that okay? Cool.
Yeah.
I got very confused about that, like, momentarily, because in the New Vegas episode, we make a joke about him being Chandler, and like, I didn't know that until just now, really, when we recorded that episode.
It is a weird pick for a voice actor, but it's not bad.
And also, Chandler Bing is New Vegas's version of Patrick Stewart. Think about it. The celebrity voice who is only there for a little bit. Yeah. Let's see here. Yeah. Definitely. No. I had a moment of panic there because, like, wait, is it Matthew Perry or Matt LeBlanc? Oh no. What? No. Did I get Joey and Chandler confused?
Don't worry. No one else knows either.
Ben, what does Michael say?
Michael says, I love the over-the-top action events in Metal Gear Rising Revengeance. There's a real David and Goliath moment between Raiden and the first boss. Blocking a building-sized chainsaw as a regular-sized dude makes you feel so awesome.
That opening sequence is so cool. It really is. This isn't a spoiler. You're playing as Raiden, and you are taking out kind of like a fleet of Metal Gear Rays.
Mm-hmm.
And if you know Metal Gear stuff, that is impressive.
So I watched a Let's Play of Metal Gear Rising because nothing I have can run it. Is the rest of Metal Gear Solid so like blatantly sci-fi?
No, it's always been a little bit sci-fi, and like 4 is the closest they get, but Revengeance is in kind of a league of its own because it's set so far into the future relative to everything else.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's see. David, what does Graham say?
Graham says, ever since I first played Earthbound as a kid, the climax to Magicant stands out as my favorite empowering moment in video games. The famous super level up the hero Ness gets after defeating his own nightmares rewards the player with an increase in statistic strength not often seen in video games. The moment Ness levels up is almost emotional. Although Ness does not really have a character, he's the silent protagonist, the trek through Magicant, the flashbacks to his child, or babyhood, and the disembodied voice giving Ness inspirational advice hints at a personal character arc not told through dialogue. So overcoming that and coming out on the other side almost twice as strong as before is very effective from a gameplay standpoint.
Yeah. That is a good sequence. Magicant is like it's like a journey to the center of the mind kind of thing. It's also really pretty if you go and look up kind of like screens of it.
You have to check that out.
Yeah. Earthbound is so good.
Did they release that on the Wii U?
Yeah.
Huh. I'm going to have to track that down.
Kind of against all odds, too.
Yeah, I have no idea the story, but I know it was one of those games that was like never going to be re-released.
Yeah, that was like a big win for them. Yeah, I haven't played it, so I don't know if they got rid of the music samples that were problematic, but.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah. They sampled like the Who and they sampled the Beatles and stuff, which is a no-no. Dennis, what does Tim say?
Tim says, hopping into a scorpion as Master Chief in Halo is pretty much like hitting a win button. but the most dynamic empowerment scenario was Castlevania Symphony of the Night, where you start out OP'd, lose it all to death, and then reacquire your gear and experience throughout the game. Nothing like a quick slash of the blade to kill a monster 3 times your size to make you feel invincible. There are a lot of games that use that, hey, you start with everything, and then we suck it away, and you earn it back over time.
Yeah, it's like a common thing in Metroid. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Ooh, I'm sorry, which one was Symphony of the Night? I can never keep the music things separate.
That was the PlayStation 1 that kind of like kicked off the exploration-based Castlevania stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the one that's kind of like, it was the major template for the DS games.
Okay.
Yeah, but yeah, it's funny. They take it away just to let you know what you're going to build up to. Does that happen in, I forget, does that happen in Batman?
I can't remember what, I think there's some, like, a little bit of a reset, but I don't think it's, like, complete, like, in other games.
In the first one, it's because he's, like, you know, he's just visiting. He's dropping someone off so he doesn't have all his crap.
Yeah, because that makes sense. It's not like he's got a utility belt where he'd, you know, keep utility items.
I know you start off with some of the things that you've learned in the past game, at the beginning of the Batman games.
Can't recall correctly.
In City, isn't there, like, his implausible, like, he drops his gear from orbit or something?
Yeah, the very first scene, like, he's just in civilian clothes and he climbs to a roof and gets his suit, but, Yeah,
there's, like, an airdrop, and then, like, they basically drop his gear like it's a bunch of head crabs from Half-Life.
Yeah, it is.
Freaking
that
head
makes
crabs.
It so much scarier now.
Yeah. Oh, Batman was already scary. Let's power through these last ones, because they're like, there's just enough for us all to get through them.
Let's do it.
Yeah. So David writes, as the most recent, this sticks out of my head. There is a point in Dark Souls 3, where you go back to the first area of the game to fight a boss. Unless you kill it in one go and run back to the boss, the run back to the boss is almost the same run up you took, to get to the boss of that area the first time through. The second in the game. Seeing these enemies fall with practically no effort is a great look how strong I've gotten moment in a game where the enemy scaling keeps things challenging throughout. Yeah, that's something. Like, I remember just kind of like taking trips back to the Berg to bully the enemies. Like, hey, you're not so tough now, are you?
You kick me off that ledge, will you?
Oh gosh. David, what does Greg say?
Greg says, I'd say there are really two empowering things for me. The first is when you finally get past a really tough stage, a boss fight, when you've been stuck at it for days or weeks trying to get through, and then you make it past, and all the hard work pays off, and you feel awesome. The second is when doing a really complex game like a strategy or simulation game. It's so confusing and complicated at first, and you're doing horrible at it, even though you pored over the manual and tutorial. And then all of a sudden, after a while, it clicks and you suddenly understand how to play it reasonably well. And you can really enjoy the game after that point.
Yeah. Speaking in broad terms.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. Ben, what does Nick say?
Nick says, how can anything beat the fighting Geth as you spacewalk up the side of a citadel as the Reaper periodically swipes at you with his giant space tentacles?
A lot of Mass Effect repping.
Who knows what game that's from?
It could have been any Citadel or Reaper. It's the hero's journey, right? First he has to deny the voyage, or deny the journey, then accept the journey, confront his shadow, then walk along the Citadel as the Reaper plays. Oh, tale as old as time.
Although I have to be honest, I think my mental image, I replaced spacewalk with moonwalk, which made this image much more entertaining than it probably was intended to be.
I'm sure you can mod that in PC, and I'm sure that's no problem. And then Dennis, what does Kilo say?
Parrying Gwyn.
And for anybody who missed that, parrying Gwyn.
Yep.
Yeah.
Short, sweet, and true.
So I'll throw mine in, Portal, just in general, full stop. Mm-hmm. The things that you do at the end of that game, specifically like getting around, flying around, barely touching the ground, kind of like surpassing these very kind of like intricate, complicated challenges, in what feels like very few moves. It's unfathomable. Like if you showed you at the end of that game to you at the beginning of that game, you'd say that wouldn't be it. Mm-hmm. And that's just because that game does so well at like kind of like guiding you step by step via your intuition. You know, mm-hmm. making you feel like, oh, their design cues and like their ideas of like what you should do next are your own idea, and you're just building the skill up. But yeah, it is definitely wonderful to just fly essentially by using this weird little physics hack.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. David, how about you?
Sure. I think the most empowered I've ever felt by a game was when I turned off the Stanley Parable. No, I'm sorry.
Sorry, it's all the air left me.
I'm sorry. I hope people realize that I'm joking about that. I don't actually like. I didn't like the game, but I don't hate it that much. Yeah. But no, I think more realistically, I think Jake from Resident Evil 6, pretty much the entirety of playing the entirety of his campaign, just like punching things. When I played it, I virtually did not use his weapons. And in particular, there's a reoccurring kind of nemesis style boss in Leon and Helena's campaign that you fight like five times and keeps coming back. And finally, in Jake and Sherry's campaign, Jake defeats it by repeatedly punching it off into it falls off of like a walkway into like some like molten metal Terminator style.
Nice.
Yeah. And Jake, he like his whole campaign is like some what is it? It's some They Live level of like unnecessary wrestling moves.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Ben, how about you?
All right, I wrote down a lot for this because I was trying to brainstorm ones, so I'll try and keep it. So I'll say in line with Portal, The Witness is also really good about teaching you a lot of things and having you like know a lot at the end of the game. Halo and Battlefront in terms of being able to fly on something and blow that something up and then go back to the other something that you were at before. Half-Life 2, which is pictured for obvious reasons. The original God of War for similar reasons. Katamari Damacy for gradual reasons. And then the biggest one for me is Shadow of the Colossus.
Hmm.
So. Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Today, my son, you will kill a mountain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's not a quote. That's just something I said.
Well, the quote is...
Now it's a quote.
Some mountains are climbed, other mountains there are slain.
Yep. I like my version better. Yeah, this has a better ring to it, I think.
It is the Colocracy. So.
that was a joke from before. And Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, nothing can beat the feeling that when you stick a grenade to a grunt in Halo and it runs away screaming, "Fuck me!"
He's just asking, like, he knows he's doomed and he doesn't want to die a virgin.
But yeah, grunts do a great job of injecting both humor and empowerment into that game.
I always felt really good like hopping onto one of the tanks or something like that.
Tear the panel off.
Yeah, like pounding on and like dropping a grenade in there. That always felt, I don't know, like I like clinging to the side of a moving thing and just fucking it up.
Yeah.
Punching someone while he's trying to drive around.
That's why I don't like a cool drive shotgun.
This is my car now.
No, I in a similar vein, I think sniping someone out of a tank. Mm-hmm. I really kind of miffed that they took that out after the first game.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it makes no sense why your tank is, armored everywhere except for the passenger compartment.
So you have to see it.
You just have to drive it backwards into battle.
Yep.
An actual strategy. Well, thank you, everybody, for writing in. We really appreciate it. If you want to take part in these, Dennis puts them up on our Facebook page at facebook.com/thelevelpodcast on Tuesday afternoons. And we really appreciate everybody for writing in.
The grind.
Now it is time for The Grind, where we talk about the games we've been playing over the past week. Do you guys mind if I go?
Go for it.
Do it.
Yeah. So I've
Democracy.
I really don't want that to be a title. Let's see here. I'm
a killer alternate, so don't worry.
Okay, cool. So I was away. I was out of town for the holiday, which meant that I was kind of not stuck with my Vita. That makes it sound pretty bad, but I ended up playing on my Vita pretty much all weekend as I was relaxing.
Living my Vita.
And so the game that I played... it's a game I've had for a while, but just kind of like it's a kind of a big commitment. Steins Gate.
Wait, the game or the anime?
Both of you said something at the same time. To answer your question, David, the visual novel that the anime is based on.
Okay.
Dennis, what was the question you asked?
I just said I haven't heard of that.
Yeah. So this is it's a pretty kind of like well-regarded visual novel. And it is kind of the straightest visual novel that I've played, insofar as it is not like an Eastern or Japanese, adventure game where there's like a bunch of puzzles and stuff. Like, this is straight up like you are, you know, reading dialogue and watching events unfold as things go along. This has more interactivity than I think a lot of these do, because kind of the twist of it is this is a story about time travel. And it kind of articulates by you using your phone. So as you're going through and as you are kind of like talking to people and kind of like interacting and, you know, kind of playing as these as this kind of like really dorky scientist guy and his like otaku friends as they accidentally develop a time machine, you're getting like these texts from other characters, and how you respond to them has an impact on the way that the story kind of unfolds, mostly towards the end. I kind of like took a peek at the way the story kind of like branches, and like I'm just now getting to the point, like about 12 hours in, where it kind of like shifts around. But like, it's kind of the usual thing where there's like a true ending that you have to follow most of the way through that will be apparent once you have like perfect information about it. And then instead of being like a lot of visual novels where it's like a romance thing as you like get to the end of one person's line, it's more like, hey, like their preferred way that the story ends almost. As you kind of like go along with them. So this is really good. Like I said, like most of my experience with the genre has been like, oh, Virtue/Reward or the Phoenix Wright kind of stuff that would be more, along the adventure game kind of line. And this is kind of in the same genre as like the Zero Escape stuff, like strong personalities spouting pseudoscience. But like, I have, you know, like there's some really suspect science. Like, the time machine is made by combining a microwave with a cell phone.
Although
I suppose I think there was more going on. I think there was some kind of like a like Loki figure happening there. David, what were you going to say?
So I have a friend who's really into like time travel fiction is her thing, mm-hmm. and is really into Steins;Gate that, and at least her feeling is that it has the best like thought out kind of kind of like theory of like depicting time travel and like the consequences in terms of like how you deal with paradoxes and stuff like that.
Yes.
Of anyone's any like fiction she's seen.
Yeah. And like, to go into the details of the way that articulates would be like kind of to spoil stuff, but like, you know, they fudge over that and kind of like make that less confusing, or let's put it this way, make time travel and quantum stuff not narratively destructive, sure. Or irrelevant by, sure. making it so your point of view character, there's something special about him, and I don't know what that is, but they make it so that he is the only person who can actually perceive the way that changes happen. And like, though they go through a bunch of different stuff, like there are some ideas here that like you see like, oh, like that I recognize from Futurama, or that I recognize like, oh, that's like there's a little bit of Looper in that, like, etc. Yeah. You know, down the line for it. But like, it's really novel the way that it kind of goes. Like, you know, it starts out like for the majority of it, and I think that even like throughout it, and I don't know if this is a spoiler, you know, what you send because the time machine is so kind of like ramshackle, you can only send like 36 bytes of data. So like, you know, the way they affect the past is by sending text messages back, you know, to somebody and saying like, hey, do this. So they try it out with like, oh, well, here's a lottery number. And then, you know, what happens there?
That's a really short text message.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, so as opposed to like, okay, well, I'm going to physically travel back, it's more like, what can we send back to like have the changes cascade forward? And like a lot of it's over explained, like in the way that this stuff is, like, you know, 999 or Virtue/Reward. It's a lot of like somebody like saying something and then three people repeating it. You just have to like
more dramatically.
So you just have to like, you kind of have to get over that a little bit. And, you know, something that comes up, you know, when you bring this up is like, yes, it is incredibly anime, but in a very self-conscious kind of way. Like all of your characters, you know, at least the handful of main ones are these kind of like otaku people who are living in Akihabara, you know, and like everybody, you know, like everything is moe and blah, 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 like stuff that generally kind of annoys me. But like it feels like it's being done with enough like tongue in cheek kind of stuff where like it works even if you have contempt for that kind of thing.
Another thing. Is it voice acted? Are you experiencing it in English?
I'm reading it in English. I turn the voice acting on and off. It's not dubbed, so you're getting the original Japanese performance, which is good in like a really heightened emotional kind of side, you know, scene. But like it's very distracting to hear. Like a different language as you're trying to like follow along. That and just I kind of don't like voiced dialogue in these things. I like going really fast and like speeding through at the speed that I read.
Sure. The reason I ask is, again, according to this friend, a lot of the like kind of more self-aware dialogue you're talking about is something that was, at least according to them, added in the English translation. And so like they listen to, you know, watch the anime dubbed for that reason, because apparently the dialogue is just much more just like, I don't know, earnest, or you're like serious in the Japanese.
Oh, they watch it subbed as opposed to listening to the jokey English version.
What?
They watch the anime subbed as opposed to listening to the jokey English
version. Instead of subbed.
Oh, so they listen with the. Wait,
with
I don't understand.
English dialogue.
They listen to it with the English dialogue because it's more serious?
No, because it's more comedic.
Okay, yeah.
Better written, whatever. Supposedly. Like I said, I have no personal experience. But.
Yeah. So like that whole side of it, like, yeah, I look at it and, you know, just like, I've shit on anime a lot. And I'm kind of hypocritical because, like, oh, there's, you know, some that I like and some that I don't. I'm a sucker for a time travel story and for, you know, like a visual novel. This has been on my list for a while. I'm kind of looking at this like it's a little bit like a Kevin Smith movie in a way, like, oh, these are people who really like, you know, comics and pop culture and stuff like that, except like what if they found a time machine and just kind of like, you know, just like the American version of it would be like somebody who's really into like Star Wars and superhero stuff, and, you know, just like, yeah, like, okay, well, I just like there's enough there that like if I fixate on the parts of it that might annoy me, it might be like, yeah, whatever, but like the it's good enough like even outside of that to where it really works. So like I'm in kind of like the third act, like everything is really kind of dramatic. What I will say is the prologue and the first chapter, they drag. They're just so shitty. Mm-hmm. But something happens like around the time where things start moving, and the stakes get a little bit higher, the characters have established themselves, either that or you just kind of get used to it. I'm not quite sure what happened. But yeah, like I dig it. It's kind of costly. I haven't seen it go on sale. Like I got it for like $50 on the e-store. I think these games, they end up being, you know, pretty expensive for a while. But
is that just because we're in the US and not Japan, or?
Oh no, like it's available on the exactly. You have to go back and deposit something in a high interest account. No, I got it from the American store. No, like it was released, like it was delayed for a really long time in America, like the English version here. But yeah, I don't know what it costs now, but I don't know. I feel like I just kind of like talked straight over that. Do you guys have any questions about Steins Gate?
No, I have to note as I'm looking at it that it is an appropriately anime title because it is Steins semicolon Gate.
Yeah, and they play with that too, like just the fact that it's nonsense. Like your main character is a guy who, like, as a kind of like this coping mechanism, he's like really awkward. He styles himself as like a mad scientist from an anime kind of thing, and he provides everything with like incredibly overdramatic names. and like nice. Steins Gate is the name of the organization that he has made up in his head that dictates his every move.
Nice.
People are like, it doesn't make any sense. Stop doing this. You're a jackass. We can't tell when you're serious. All that kind of stuff. But like, even that, like, weird little quirk is paying off in some really kind of like cool ways. So, I don't know. So, go ahead.
So, on something sort of related, I don't know why this reminded me. Have any of you ever seen the Baron whatever bears conspiracies?
Oh, the Berenstain Bears, where people think that we live in a converged timeline where at one point there was the Berenstain Bears,
yes,
or the Berenstain Bears, and people remember it being spelled differently, and it just turns out, oh, you read those when you were really little and you just misremembered, and not everything has to be a quantum conspiracy.
Yes. Yes, it's definitely my new favorite conspiracy theory, and especially, I guess, more relevant to this, that with it being so controversial, people have started referring to it as Steingate.
That's pretty good.
Oh, that is good. Man, the only other question I had is Steinsgate a universe or a story? Like, you said there's an anime to go along with the visual novel. Like, is it the same thing, or is it like, hey, this is kind of a universe cast of characters that you could see as Steins Gate 2 or, you know, other games in this universe?
The way that it's kind of like gearing up right now, I don't know how there can be a sequel, but that's just them raising the stakes and everything is kind of getting weird, like a time travel thing is. The anime that we're referring to is actually just like a straight up adaptation of the visual novel. I like playing it. I'm probably going to check out the anime because it's really well regarded, and I just want to see like how these characters are treated in the dub. Like, just, I'm invested now. So I'm really curious about that. I'd rather play this in a game just because, you know, of that choice angle. Like, I feel like,
sure,
you know, it's a really good kind of depiction of time travel in a video game. And like, to me, having player agency in that kind of story makes it feel a little bit more powerful.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool. I feel like everything I said there may or may not, like, if you heard something you don't like or care for in that, then you kind of know if it is for or not for you. Oh, it dropped down to like $29.99. So that's not cheap by any stretch of the imagination. Also, it's available on PS3, I think. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah. But yeah, that's everything. I'm probably going to
really cool.
continue plugging away at it. I'm having a good time with it. Also, it's beautiful. Like, the art style is real flowing, real kind of like colorful and bright.
I feel like this segues well because I've been playing more Danganronpa. So this is what my appetite to talk about that.
Nice. Go ahead.
Just from this conversation, I am really glad I have no familiarity with anime tropes because I have nothing to be annoyed about.
here's the thing. Like, there are people like Jala is playing Danganronpa 1 right now, and you know, she's kind of sent over some messages. And, you know, we're chatting about it. Just kind of like, oh yes, it just everything is very anime here. Like, I saw that, but like, there's something about Danganronpa that kind of wraps it around and states it in such a strong way that it kind of feels like its own thing. It doesn't feel like referential in a lot of ways, you know?
Yeah. This is a place where I think ignorance is serving me very well, I guess, mm-hmm. I just don't know the tropes. I'm not familiar with the medium. And so I can't look at a character in Danganronpa and be like, oh, that's totally the X person that's in every anime.
Yeah.
It all feels fresh and good. So mm-hmm. I'm just because I've talked with Jal about Danganronpa a little bit too. I'm realizing that's kind of playing to my advantage here.
Yeah.
So just a funny thought from the conversation with her and this conversation.
Yeah. There are people who like anime who think that Danganronpa is too anime for them. And anybody who is annoyed when we use anime as an adjective without defining that, like, I don't even know what that means right now. But like, since I'm talking about something I like, it doesn't matter. I'm not casting aspersions on a thing you like. So
sure. Yeah. The other thing I have to say is based on the previous conversation, I think Danganronpa has the perfect solution for audio in this type of game, which is just a kind of verbal or audio stingers to go with text.
Mm-hmm.
So when a character is talking, you know, each thought that comes from them will be punctuated with like a "hey" or, you know, just an exclamation of some kind.
You gotta be kidding me.
Yeah. But there's like kind of a, it's a very large pool, but it is a finite pool of audio reactions, or just stingers is the right way to say it.
It's like for every character portrait pose they have, there's like a handful of like different, like, oh, this is a splash of the way that this character is reacting for you to, like, you know, kind of like that deep dreaming thing that we talked about earlier, to apply over the actual text that you're internalizing.
Yeah. So you're kind of, yeah. And that gets, so that gives you a flavor of their emotion as you're reading the specifics of their text. My favorite is Ibuki's. That's just I can't replicate it right, but that's
Ibuki. Is he the mechanic guy?
Oh no, Ibuki is the musician chick.
Ah, okay, yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
So
God, I love Danganronpa too.
it's shaping up really well. So it's a great game to play just for reading. Mm-hmm. But I always keep the audio on because I like to hear those stingers.
They're really kind of like seamless about when they go into stuff that's fully voiced and stuff that isn't.
Yeah, well. Yeah. It has a really good feel to it. The other big thought I have from playing it further is I'm trying to think how to articulate this. The problem of overexposition, and you referred to it a little bit with Steins Gate, and this has been on my mind a lot before even you brought up Steins Gate, which is, it feels like at times in Danganronpa, they're being very obvious and restating a plot point over and over again. And so you'll like be trying to solve a mystery and it's like, oh, I get it. This is what happened. And then the characters talk through it for 3 minutes more. And it's super annoying.
Isn't that anime?
Maybe, but like, what I was going to say is it's super annoying until you realize that this is only happening. It's only annoying when I get it ahead of time. That there have to be, you know, for every one time that I'm like, oh, I get it, stop talking about it, there have to be three where I don't get it and I need that extra exposition to get me there. And I just don't notice it then because I need the extra exposition to get me there.
What there needs to be is a yada yada button.
I think we have a title.
But like, no, seriously, like, just okay, if they are, you know, it's like the parlor room kind of thing where they're kind of like walking through, it's just one thing I don't understand, you know. if they're doing that, it's kind of like yada yada, like just fast forward me through to like the next relevant thing, just like to be self-aware enough. Like, I don't know that it's a, I don't know that's an anime thing. I think it's just like a young adult fiction thing.
Sure, maybe, yeah.
You know, just or anything. I think that it's still a problem.
It's a really interesting problem because you have to play to the lowest common denominator in some ways.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that in like an insulting way or anything like that, but like, you have to write this for the person who's going to get it the slowest.
Mm-hmm.
And some people might get other pieces faster, but just the one person who's not going to follow where this is headed, you need to write it so that they can eventually get there.
Yeah.
And you need to do that with every scene. So that's mm-hmm. that's a huge challenge.
Yeah. Especially in a mystery game. Like, it's still a problem if like you're getting it and it's getting like, oh man, you're just beating me over the head with this. I've already figured it out, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera. But like, there's still times where it's kind of like, oh, I have a prevailing theory that I'm operating on. And then there's a line of questioning that is like testing it. And it's like, okay, well, oh, there's new detail that kind of like calls it up. Like, it's kind of a give and take, mm-hmm. you know, in a real serious way. Yeah, it's just that's tough. You know, it's even like a problem in like Virtue's Last Reward, where like so much of that operates on like, okay, what's really going on here? Because there's some bizarre kind of subtle shit happening, especially mm-hmm. as regards like people's backgrounds and stuff. But like, it's the same thing. Like, you know, these are narrative games. Your reward is enlightenment almost, or understanding, right? By, you know, paying attention and connecting the dots. And whenever they belabor it, it's kind of like, it's a problem of pacing in a way that I think would be easier to brush over on like a television show.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
other interesting stuff that has happened while playing Danganronpa 2 further. I talked last time about how it's a little bit weird that when you complete someone's like relationship conversation series, it gives you their underwear.
Yeah.
I can confirm now that it does that for guys as well as girls.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't make it any less creepy, but at least it's...
No.
Fuck, but I have a brief.
Neither in this case. I don't know what happened. So did you complete the relationship line for Gundam?
No.
He's like the crazy hamster breeder guy.
Yeah.
So he really like funny over the top character. His underwear are invisible, like Emperor's clothes style. You can only see them if you have high enough like astral divination or something.
Yeah.
So I got to that, and despite the creepiness, I laughed. So that was funny.
Did you say you beat the game?
No, I have not beat that. Okay, I've not progressed too far from where we talked last, but just enough to have some fun.
At the point where you have like five pairs of underwear, I think you need to question, have I lost the game?
Yeah. Well, it's also just apart from the underwear, it's an interesting dynamic of, you know, a large percentage of these people are going to die. Mm-hmm. And I'm a completionist at heart, so I want to see as much of the game as possible. So I'm ordering who I'm talking to by who I think is most likely to die, if that makes any sense.
It's a dangerous game.
So yeah, I just like this idea that like your character has, through you, developed this, I know, this like psychosis of like whoever I talk to is the one who's going to die or whatever.
Like, well, you're terrified because like you're emotionally invested in these characters. You've spent time talking to them. That's a finite resource. And so for them to get killed off right before you get to the end of their like relationship series of conversations would be heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And I've had that happen to one character so far, but like as I get further in the game, it's more and more likely.
Yeah. When you say relationship, it's important for people to know, you know, despite the fact that underwear is involved, this is mostly like, hey, what's your past? Like earning their trust and talking with them.
So it's interesting. So like the one with Gundam is, you learn about his just how he got into like the whole like animal training area, and also his relationship with his mom. Mm-hmm. And that's the relationship.
Yeah. Some of those backstories are super sad.
Yeah. And then he gives you his underwear. So.
Or lack thereof.
Yeah. Or, well, I don't know. I don't know if I have enough astral vision. I just got that astral vision. Got it. Okay. Okay. I get it. Okay. So yeah, that's good. The other just quirk of the system. So when you have conversations with characters, you have the opportunity to give them a gift. And if you give them, it's a huge inventory of gifts. There's something like, you know, 200 items that you could possibly give them. But if you give them a gift that they like, then you get to know them a little better. Whereas if you give them something they don't like, they kind of shut you out. The mystery that I'm in right now involves you being locked in a place with no food. And yet I was talking with someone who likes food as their like character trait or whatever, whatever. And I looked at my list of gifts and realized, just kind of game, you know, fourth wall breaking, I have a pantry's worth of food sitting on my list of gifts that I could give.
You're hoarding it.
Yeah. That I could be keeping everyone alive with. But you know, that's just kind of casually ignored for the sake of the plot of everyone is starving to death. Yeah. But it's really, really funny to be, you know, everyone's starving to death and afraid that it's kind of an interesting concept. Like the way you get food is if you kill someone. Mm-hmm. Like, I will give you guys food when you kill someone. Yeah. Otherwise you'll all starve to death. That's really interesting and dark. But then I'm having this conversation with this person while we're starving to death. And it's like, here, have a big baguette. Hopefully you like this gift.
I don't know how I hid this baguette. But...
Yeah. It's like, well, I've got six of them and four of rice pudding and all this other stuff. So it's funny in the way and the timing of when I was talking to that character, it lined up with this mystery in a really funny way.
Yeah. So this isn't a spoiler. Like, the name without context doesn't mean anything. You're in the Strawberry Hotel.
I am.
Yeah. That's a great chapter.
The murder has occurred. I'm in investigation. I have my suspicions on what's actually happening. Mm-hmm. Again, we'll see whether or not I'm guessing right. It's really fun to play the game or read the novel or whatever you want to say from the perspective of like they are writing up a very interesting locked room mystery,
mm-hmm.
or whatever. Because you can kind of almost see them laying down pieces in advance, but you can't put it all together until during the class trial.
Yeah.
So that's a good time.
I really can't wait for Danganronpa 3.
Are Danganronpa two different people?
No,
I have no idea.
It's one word, Danganronpa, not Dang and Rampa. It's a it's like a it is a portmanteau of like truth bullet or something like that, I think.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I think. Well, please forgive me if I'm incorrect on that.
Yeah.
What were you gonna say, Dennis?
I don't know that I have much more to say. Okay. It's just the game stays a lot of fun as I play it, so
great.
I'm very much playing it on my own time. I'm taking a long time with this game, but loving every second of it.
And it's like reading a book. You kind of have to address it on your own terms.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cool. Was that all?
Yeah, I will say really quick, I had a 77-year run on Tokyo Jungle, which is impressive.
That's long. Yeah.
That's long. If you get to 100 years, that's basically like the game's kill screen. So that is easily 70% more than I've gotten before.
Hmm.
And it was one of those runs where I'm just like, well, I'll never get this far again. So might as well stop trying.
What was the animal?
Labrador Retriever, of course.
See, I feel like I would hope like once you get to like Velociraptor that should be possible to beat that.
maybe we'll see.
Yeah. Have you played any of the story mode?
It's inscrutable to me and not very fun. So no.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, it just the sections of it are super clunky. So okay. Basically, this is a big kind of roguelike survival game, and the story mode breaks it into like very discrete chunks that just feel completely out of line with the rest of the game.
But like, the you know, stories are hilarious.
Maybe I just haven't gotten to the right ones. Like, it's been like, oh, you're lost and you need to find your mom. Go from point A to point B. Whereas, you know, the main survival game is we're dumping you into this city that's gone to shit. Survive.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hmm. Well, that's cool. Ben, I'm curious what you've been up to.
So I was curious what you've been up to. Have you done any Uncharted since last week?
I think maybe a little bit more. Okay. I just when I left off, I had just gotten to Scotland. You know what? So I hadn't. I just finished the Italian job. And then I took that DVD out and I put in Uncharted 4. No, I just finished the auction. Sequence. Yeah. And so now I'm headed to the graveyard. Yeah. So have not proceeded with that. That's that is going to be in the coming week or so that I want to polish that off.
Cool. I've only done FTL and Rocket League, so it's just business as usual. Yeah. I don't know if I've even unlocked any ships between last week and this week, but
any harrowing exploits in FTL?
You know, I've died a lot of times, like at the final boss battle, so that's always like the opposite of fun. But I'm in the middle of a game right now where I'm at the boss battle, the first stage of it. So it's I guess the one that I'm playing right now is one of the expanded editions to the game, and so it's the race where they automatically drain oxygen from a room. And so I'm using. There's only two of them, and I don't think you can get any more. Like all the crew that you can hire seems to be the typical races. So I'm trying to use them to board other people's ships since they'll drain oxygen out of their rooms. And then I'll try and hack the room that they're in with the other people as well. So it's harder for them to get out. So it basically drains room of oxygen. Then they can like wipe out those people and then wipe out whatever room they're in. So
you're just manufacturing a casket for them.
Yeah, it's kind of dark, I guess, when you think about the details of what's going on. But it's a cartoon animation, so it seems light and jovial. But yeah, I don't know. So that game is fun. Rocket League's also a lot of fun. I noticed that Rocket League's going to be on the monthly bundle that we were talking about before for next month. So you can get it for under the price that you could typically pay for it, and you get a bunch of other games too.
Big influx of players for you to chew through.
Possibly. I don't know. Not much to say there. So.
Cool. Huh. What's
Ben,
so
you're on PC, right, for Rocket League?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. But it no longer matters.
Yeah.
True.
So Ben, you were looking forward to No Man's Sky, right? That was going to be like your next big jam.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's a bummer. Like, what are you looking forward to now? Like, what's the?
I don't know, man. What should I play? I mean, I have a wish list log, so I might go through that. Her Story is an option. Doom looks really cool. I don't know if I want to pay full price for it or not, but
Doom seems like something that'd be like $40 in 3 to 4 months.
Yeah,
or like in the upcoming sale, like maybe it'll hit like 45 or something. Like, not that paying full price for a game is bad, but like if you were so inclined,
yeah. So I don't know if there's any sort of must-have game that I'm looking forward to right now, but that's fine. I'm not like, I'm fine with that.
Mm-hmm. In terms of old games, No Man's Sky didn't get canceled, you realize. It just got delayed a little bit.
Oh, yeah, I know that. Yeah.
You're talking about it like they send it into the sun.
No, from talking to Ben, I know that he, forgive me if I'm speaking out of line, Ben, but you kind of go from big release to big release. Like you've kind of got, you always have your next one in mind. And so having that push forward is kind of a bummer, right?
Mm-hmm. I guess the other option is, I know I got the original Witcher and I don't know if the DLC comes with it or not. And so that could be one possible to go back into that, but I don't know if I'm ready to go back into that sort of game. It's so big.
Very.
Yeah. So.
David, how about you? What you got?
Sure. I've pretty much just been doing a ton of Dark Souls 3.
Yeah. So so last time we spoke, you were in Farron's Keep.
Yeah. So I defeated the actually went back and beat the what is it, the Crystal Sage, whatever.
Yes.
Because I had actually done that. And then went and did Cathedral of the Deep and beat the Deacons.
Yes.
And then finally got around to doing Farron's Keep.
Yeah, did you beat the Abyss Watchers?
Yeah, I beat them. You were right, that is a really, really badass boss fight.
It's great.
it both in terms of like, I feel like the mechanics are pretty good, like both in terms of being interesting and at least I felt not too like enragingly difficult or at least not unfairly difficult.
It feels a lot like a Bloodborne fight, honestly.
Yeah.
Like you start out with a big fracas with a bunch of people and then, kind of a one-on-one duel against a guy. For context on this, and sorry if this is spoilers, but like it's a really cool fight. The Abyss Watchers are a bunch of knights who style themselves after Artorias from Dark Souls 1. They are kind of like fighting, and part of this is like the first bit of the fight is a big gang fight a little bit, right. but they turn on each other like they're completely mindless.
Well, because they kind of imply that it's it almost comes across as kind of like a fight club type thing, sort of.
I'm not sure. We're gonna have to talk about it on the episode because like I think they're just so far gone that they are turning against each other because of the Abyss taint that they've got.
Sure. I mean, that would be, I know, only the one, sorry, this is only the one with the like red, like whatever evil eyes will actively go after the others.
Right.
So,
yeah.
But yeah, yeah. So yeah, I feel like that was really cool. And just like, yeah, the way it's presented, like the cutscenes, for a really good, the pacing's really good.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked that fight. I was also a little bit proud, even though I think it was probably an easier one, that I was able to beat the Deacons on my first try.
That's a fun fight too. It's a little bit of like a puzzle thing. Like that is a kind of a unique setup.
Yeah. Yeah. So that one was also kind of cool. I also enjoyed, that was one that very blatantly, like giant freaking swords was the optimal strategy.
Well, this is convenient.
That one, although I'm really mixed. I really liked the Cathedral of the Deep's like level. I wish it reminded me a lot more of Bloodborne. I wish they would do more of like that. That's probably the least linear of all the levels I've seen so far.
Yeah, it's weird to hear you say that because it feels very, very classic Dark Souls to me.
It reminds me of the original Dark Souls, not so much the rest of three.
Right. Yeah.
And I would say even compared to the original, like it reminds me of the original in terms of like how they did shortcuts. Mm-hmm. But whereas it reminds me more of Bloodborne is in terms of like the like overlapping actually be things where like if you want to, you can just like jump off the edge and like try to land on an area below to like skip ahead and you know things like that.
Yeah, that's that area is balls hard too.
Yeah, that was actually what I was going to say. Like, I like that, but I feel like it came across like they sat down and were like, we're going to take every annoying mechanic in this game and put it together.
You won't have context for this, David, but Dennis, for your kind of edification on this, it's very much like Earthen Peak.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
I'd be honest to say, were there any specific mechanics though you're thinking of that you felt were
kind of mixing long term kind of like status effect kind of stuff with the leeches and things like that, just in with kind of an uncharacteristic difficulty spike a little bit,
sure.
And just kind of like more hostile geometry than you would have elsewhere.
Sure.
Yeah.
Although I feel like one advantage I am having is I've spent a lot of points on health basically, and so that is one nice thing is that like I found that the a lot of the status effects matter a little bit less to me, but
that's good.
It's interesting. It annoys me that Patches is apparently telekinetic.
I love Patches.
Yeah.
And a time traveler.
And a dimension hopper.
Yeah. Well, you know, as he do. So then I got to the catacombs, and I think I've gotten to the boss of the catacombs.
Wow, you're trucking.
Yeah, well, I kind of have a fair amount of free time, although I think I don't know. This boss is either going to be, I think, very, very difficult for me, or I'm going to figure out how to cheese him with arrows.
Cheesing him with arrows is decidedly not the way to do it, unfortunately.
Okay.
It's if you get frustrated, look up a video. It's kind of broken.
Oh, really?
Yeah. At least it was when I played through it. I don't know if it's been fixed.
Broken in terms of easy to beat?
No.
Or in terms of difficult?
Broken in terms of it is an advancing wall of instant death that you just kind of have to hope you, get the right moves, get him to do the right moves to make himself, vulnerable.
Okay. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
It's
cool thematically. Like it's really neat. Like I love the visual appeal of it, but I was very frustrated.
Sure.
It took more tries than it felt like it ought to, just because of kind of piddling mechanical looseness.
Sure. Sure. I'm definitely making something. Yeah. I did a lot of and granted I'm using the wiki a lot for this because it seems just kind of inscrutable, but I've been putting some work with trying to advance some of the like NPC quest line.
Yeah, you need a wiki for those. God.
Yeah. Although my understanding is like a number of them are mutually exclusive, correct?
A handful. A handful are kind of like opposed on faction lines.
Okay.
A little bit.
Okay. It's a little bit annoying. I'm kind of in this setting. The female Hollow Knight. She kind of messes around with her storyline. It's a little bit annoying that you don't have like more direct agency with that.
Yeah, you just kind of have to trigger where she shows up next. That's Henri.
Well, and just being like, I feel like there needs to be an option for just saying, like, you realize these people are blatantly up to no good, right? like seriously, we both realize this, right?
Am I the only person who sees it? Am I crazy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah. So I don't know. I'm really enjoying it. I feel like I don't know if this is either like, you know, me having some more exposure to Fireside Chats and therefore like thinking about these things more or not, but I feel like the storyline's a lot more coherent in this one.
Maybe. I think that like they all have kind of like different styles, and maybe this one is kind of hitting you stronger. For me, it felt a little bit more kind of like slipshod until things started coming together. But like, sure. It's awesome that you're like getting a lot out of it.
Sure. What I think it is like, I don't know if this makes sense, but it's like, I'm not sure that, that I actually, you know, like obviously, you know, this is a game where like the story is revealed, you know, as you go along, and like, it's supposed to be, you know, kind of, you know, arcane. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure that I necessarily like overall have more insight into this story, but I feel like whereas the previous one, say like the item descriptions and stuff like this, just, you know, just seem to be kind of like name dropping random facts.
Mm-hmm.
In this one, it seems like kind of this selection of like what they cause you to see when.
Mm-hmm.
Gives kind of the silhouette of a story.
Yeah.
So you know, like in the previous one, like, yeah, there was a talk of, you know, like a various, like, you know, like, you know, witch hunts and, you know, church structure and stuff like this. Mm-hmm. But like, they just kind of said, here's some facts. Whereas this one, it seems like they, you know, you can, even if I don't know what's going on, I can, you know, kind of piece together, you know, there is a story of like, there's clearly some church that's got promoting some sort of doctrine that's somehow related to like undead pilgrimage and the, you know, the crazy, fire huggy ladies are somehow involved. And like, mm-hmm. you know, there's an outline of story, even if there isn't plot, you know?
Yeah. That's why I prefer it. I'd rather have those kind of impressionistic strokes, yeah, as opposed exactly. to something really rigid.
Do you think? I don't know if this is just me being kind of primed for it, but there's a number of times where I'll see something and either aesthetically or thematically, it seems like it's something that kind of like I would have expected this more in Bloodborne. Do you think they kind of transferred over some ideas, or
I think it's unavoidable that would have happened.
Sure.
And I'm for it. Like, because I feel like the stuff they kind of like transplanted works regardless of kind of like where it's at.
Okay. Yeah. Just like, you know, as like a fairly obvious example is I think it was like the Abyss Walker, like the kind of final guy. Like, mm-hmm. his outfit straight up is like classic Bloodborne.
Yeah,
like,
he's got the tricorn kind of thing. Yeah.
Huh?
He's got like the tricorn kind of thing.
Yeah, tricorn and like, well, and in particular, the weird, like, we have decided that, you know, your collar must cover your entire face thing.
Yeah.
But,
yep.
I don't know if this is a spoiler, but is apparently like the Abyss Watchers, you know, counted as a Lord of Cinder or whatever.
Yeah,
like,
they all kindle the flame themselves. And that's that's not a spoiler.
Was there a guy I killed, or like what's up with that?
They collectively did it.
Okay.
Yeah. That's revealed in the opening. Periodically go back and rewatch the opening cinematic.
Sure.
because that'll like keep you grounded in what's going on.
Is there ever an explanation, like, I guess this is kind of more of a meta question or whatever, of like what the deal is where there's a whole bunch of characters that, you know, the game or narrative seems to like talk about them as being people, but then when you get to them, they're like straight up monsters. And like, is there any like, is this just kind of like the, you know, like crazy, you know, like Greek mythology, like playing fast and loose with fast and loose with like all of a sudden Beowulf can, you know, hold his breath for, you know, 3 hours because myth.
There's a lot, you know, probably a lot of like flexibility in the read you can take on that. I think that if you walk into this knowing that kind of like pervasive corruption is a real soul's ass theme, that can like that explains a bunch of it. Like, sure. Oh, like do these people are, you know, corrupted beyond repair. And, you know, that's, you know, a slight case of monsterism.
Yeah, it's just a slight one. I do love that they. No one bats an eye at the fact that, you know, your character routinely does things that fairly obviously should not be done.
It just gets better.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. Cool. Ben, Dennis, you still there?
Yeah.
Sorry to monopolize it here.
No, it's fine.
So did you guys have any questions about Dark Souls 3 for David or us? Because I don't want to cut you guys out of it.
No, I'm excited to get my hands on the game, but yeah. I have to go through Bloodborne first.
True.
Actually, no, that's probably a good question. Okay, so I haven't gotten a PS4 yet, which means I've missed Bloodborne and Dark Souls 3. Mm-hmm. Having played Dark Souls 2, can I hop straight to Dark Souls 3 and not miss anything, or should I go through Bloodborne first?
You can go to Dark Souls 3 if you would like. I think they're both fine games.
What would you recommend? Because like, I'll have the option whenever I get a PS4 to go to either first.
Mm-hmm.
I would say at least, I imagine this is going to significantly depend on like what aspects of the gameplay you like, but I feel like the gameplay, I don't know. I think there's things that are broken about the game, about the combat system in Dark Souls 3. You know, certain enemies just don't work right. On the other hand, overall, I prefer the combat system a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, that could be because, like, I don't like the parry like aspect of Dark Souls at all, and I probably like shields more than dodging.
So. Yeah, I've never played a parry centric character.
What I'll say, Dennis, probably play Bloodborne first. It's a brief game, although Dark Souls 3 is pretty brief as well. It's a brief game. You've been away from the series for long enough that you're not going to have like muscle memory getting in your way with Bloodborne.
Sure, yeah.
I feel like it's easier to get used to Bloodborne and then step back to Dark Souls than it would be to like get really used to the pace of play in Dark Souls 3 and then go to Bloodborne. I think that would actually kind of make the period of adaptation a little bit more frustrating than it otherwise ought to be.
Well, I suppose they also like the combat mechanics in Bloodborne could probably be applied to Dark Souls 3, whereas I feel like the reverse probably isn't quite as true.
Right.
Cool. Done.
Yeah.
I'm kind of regretting not completing Dark Souls 1 and 2. Just because, in particular, like I would like to know how much of like some of the themes and stuff like that, I'm seeing have always been in the series, or are they specific to this game?
So Dark Souls 3 is a very Dark Souls 1 ass game. Mm-hmm. However, like. It's still good. You know, I can't say because I don't have perfect information. But my sense is that it's still good enough that like on its own, you're still going to get a lot of the resonance out of it. However, like there's a whole bunch that like, you know, you'll probably appreciate more, you know, if you had seen, you know, sure. the context from one, especially like what you see in the end game of one really, sure. you know, will inform that.
Well, and it's just things like something I'm wearing, like it seems to clearly your character is one of the undead, but it seems to make a differentiation between whatever you are and a hollow.
Yeah.
And whatever you are, was that ever mentioned in any of the previous games? Because I don't remember any mention of anything like that in one.
No, of what I saw. Unkindled or a new thing.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I'm very happy that you're having a good time with it.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah. And continue going on. You're getting to some really cool stuff. Like I think even like Catacombs of Karthus is pretty cool. Although I'm going to give you, actually, no, I'm going to take that offline. I don't want to spoil this for anybody who doesn't want to hear the pro tip I'm going to give.
Okay.
Are you guys cool with buttoning it up?
I am.
Okay. Thank you so much for listening to level number 152. We really appreciate you taking the time and, tuning in. I can't think of too much in the way of admin kind of stuff, anything going on. We're entering kind of some of the summer doldrums, as it were. But pay attention if you want to kind of see what's happening. We've got the Duckfeed news updates that I put out every Friday. That is at duckfeed.tv/news. To get kind of a bird's eye view of the things that are going on. But otherwise, specifically for this show, telling your friends, like word of mouth is really the only way we have to get this out there. If you have a friend who likes video games and is not against listening to a podcast or two, send them our way. We would really appreciate it. Otherwise, ratings, reviews, iTunes, Patreon, talking about us on Twitter or blogs, any of those kind of things. It all makes a big difference. Am I missing anything, fellas?
That sounds good to me.
Cool. I've been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia at D Furia on Twitter.
I've been David Meismith at MoneySmith777 on Twitter.
And I've been Ben Merkel at MerkelB on Twitch.
We're changing it up. So stick around for some titles. What do you have in the way of titles?
I think there can only be one, right? It's the yada yada button.
Well, for the purposes, like for posterity, we want to fill the missed opportunity title of the year.
I got some.
Okay.
I got Coligarchy. It was not said in the show at any point in time, but that was just something I wanted to add.
Okay.
Banter.exe.
Wait, what was that? I'm sorry.
Banter.exe.
Oh, nice.
And then Nova: fight your uncle.
I had that one as well.
As did I. Dennis, what else did you have?
The only one beyond that I had is because time travel.
Okay. David?
I got nothing.
Okay. I obviously had the yada yada button. I also had Nova fight your uncle. it's Super Saiyan turret. Totes Totoro, and Eldritch Dog Eyes.
See, I mean, I feel like yada yada button, kind of, but I really like Totes Totoro.
It does well. It's the yada yada button. It's got to be.
It's a clear winner.
Yeah.
A good crop this time too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.